This edition of the News Quiz was recorded on Thursday night, before the death of our friend and colleague Jeremy Hardy. Jeremy was an extraordinarily clever and funny man whose contributions to comedy and this station in particular stand out for their ferocious brilliance. He was a panellist on this show for over 25 years, and all of the hosts in that time came to rely on him enormously as both a contributor and friend. He had a distinct and subversive wit, and a near unique ability to be funny as well as passionate about the things he believed. He was much loved by the listeners and everyone on the programme and is already deeply missed. Our thoughts are with his family and friends, and insufficient as this is, we dedicate this show to him.
We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a notice to passengers in Liverpool, read by Diana Speed.
Mersey ferries are cancelled today because of bad weather. A replacement bus service is in operation.
Our thanks to John Newton for sending us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Aisha Hazarika. And opposite them, on my left, Sunday Times political editor Tim Shipman and Lucy Porter. Andy, what may be cause to celebrate?
Sorry, I didn't mean to sigh. just speaking for the nation. Right, well, in this week's episode of Deal or Manage No Deal, the Prime Minister, Theresa May, once again found herself at the mercy of the parliamentary arithmetic. And basically what happened was that the DUP ordered her to go back to Brussels and get the backstop binned. I don't really see the point of all these trips now that she's making to Brussels, you know, unless she's worked out that her time is limited and she just wants to bank up the air miles. I don't really see there's much point. And if Westminster really wants to advance the negotiations, then they should just send Arlene Foster and cut out the middleman. Actually, that's not a bad idea, you know. No, seriously, I honestly think the EU negotiators probably would give Arlene Foster concessions, if only to get her out of the room.
I think Andy's absolutely right about sending Arlene Foster in, because she is the hardest woman in politics, let's be honest, isn't she? Do you remember she did this briefing once? When you've got red lines in politics, she's got blood red lines. And somebody briefed out from her team, this is going to come down to who's going to blink first, and she's just cut her eyelids out. Now, Theresa May, the naughtiest thing she's ever done is run through a field of wheat. She's basically up against the Joe Pesci of politics.
I don't know quite what's going to happen in 2 weeks' time when Theresa May reports back to her handler and says she hasn't got anything. I mean, in theory, she is reaching out to other parties. She had a meeting with Jeremy Corbyn. As I understand it, they had a conversation that lasted 14 minutes, and then presumably they had to stop because they couldn't handle the excitement.
Do you think it's been a glorious week for our brave leader, Tim?
Yes, another one, a triumph. Nothing has changed. It's all still a triumph. This is Groundhog May, isn't it? But the good news is there are new developments this week, because the Prime Minister has put in charge of the negotiations three of her most talented ministers, Lidington, Barclay and Cox, which sounds a little bit like a bunch of upmarket sex therapists. The first bit of sort of bonding, as Andy said, that they've managed to do, they've brought together May and Corbyn, which is a bit like getting pandas to mate. On balance, it's been this has been a triumph. Theresa May spent 2 years telling us her deal was the only option, and everybody said no. So she turned around and said, "Well, let's do the exact opposite," and that's all going to work very well. And meanwhile, We're planning for no deal and potential martial law, and we're living in such strange times that that story made page two of my newspaper at the weekend. But it's all going to be fine. We're running out of food, but Sammy Wilson of the DUP has said, well, it's fine because we can all just go to the chippy. So, you know, domestic food production is going to be good. I've probably written more words about this mess than anybody else, and the way I'm getting out of it is to try and have a baby in the next week. But as a member of the Cabinet said to me earlier, don't worry, it will still be a shit show when you get back.
Name names. Who was that?
It was about half a dozen of them, actually.
I mean, it'll be over one day. And we'll get, there'll be a deal. It'll be Lapland plus plus or something. But, I mean, I'm just looking forward to the day when some of the more disturbing aspects have gone away. There's a trend at the moment. I was watching the news the other night, and they'd sent a reporter to Chelmsford, and this middle-aged chap said, we liberated France, we liberated Belgium, and I thought, that is a gross abuse of the word we. You know, we didn't do that. You know, our parents and our grandparents did that. The only people entitled to use the word we in that context are people who now are in their 90s. You know, and it's actually, I think it's mildly offensive to that generation who went through that to compare what they went through with the self-inflicted whinge fest that is Brexit. The worst one was a Tory Brexiteer MP who's name escapes me, because they all sort of blur into one by now, don't they? They all look like they're made out of pastry. I think it's... Is it Mark?
Francois.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, he said, well, my father fought at D-Day. He wasn't going to be pushed around by the Germans, and neither is his son. And I thought, well, he probably said that as a kind of tribute to his dad. But it is actually, when you think about it, a little insulting, isn't it, to compare landing on a beach in Normandy in a hail of bullets with sitting on leather benches going, here, here, whenever Jacob Rees-Mogg opens his gulp.
It is great that Aisha managed to identify him immediately from the description, looks like he's made of pastry.
Of course, the food shortages thing is getting really, really scary. Ben and Jerry's have said that that's the ice cream they're going to start stockpiling. I mean, I've been doing that for quite a long time, just on the safe side. And actually, there is government advice that you should get quite fat, just in case. That is what I'm telling to my mum when she makes any comments about my jeans. I'm like, this isn't weight, this is stockpiling. Actually, I think you'll find.
You don't want to make yourself look too tasty, though, do you?
I mean...
This is the news that MPs have voted for a deal put forward by Britain's new Boadicea, our gracious grey-haired Gloriana, Theresa May. She has decisively snatched something that in a certain light could be said not to be defeat from the jaws of something else, which, in fairness, also looks quite defeaty. Essentially, she's chosen to reopen the wound on her forehead by continuing to bang it against the same rugged brick wall. Or, as the Daily Mail put it, Theresa triumphs. The BBC was forced to apologise after showing footage that suggested Theresa May would fly to Brussels in a World War II Spitfire. She will, in fact, be transported in the usual way, in the boot of a Mondeo with a sock to gag her screams. Two points to Andy. Tim, who's not sanctioning bad behaviour?
This, I think, is what's going on in the former socialist paradise of Venezuela, where this naughty chap called Nicolas Maduro is running amok. His people are starving. Food banks are plenty. He's passed a law that says if you disagree with him, you can go to jail for 10 years. And stray dogs are disappearing from the streets. It's sort of proof of that old adage that socialism begins with good intentions and ends with people eating their pets. They've got this amazing thing called the Ministry for Supreme Social Happiness in Venezuela. I'm not sure that's going too well, which probably shows that old Maduro has found himself the Venezuelan equivalent of Chris Grayling to run things. there's also a four-year wait for a new car. And I was reading up again that there's a chap went off to get one of these new cars and sort of reported to the forecourt, and the chap said, "We'll come back in 4 years' time." And he said, "Morning or afternoon?" He said, "Well, what difference does it make?" And the guy said, "Well, the plumber's coming in the morning." As ever with these things, wherever there's a sort of socialist paradise collapsing, there's also a wicked imperialist power in the background, and Donald Trump is contemplating going in and stealing all the oil again, which always works out well. So you pays your money and you takes your choice. But
it feels like a real throwback to the 60s, doesn't it? Linda Smith once said that it was very inconsiderate of these small countries to have our oil under their land. And that is very much still the attitude. The really scary thing is that I know there's talk of Trump intervening, but Bolsonaro, it looks like he might intervene militarily. He's moving troops towards the border. And Bolsonaro, you're talking, that's someone who's possibly madder than Trump, which is a sentence I never thought I would ever utter. But
yeah, but I just think the Trump thing is going to be very, very interesting, because I think you're right about the oil stuff. The Americans are obsessed about oil, and Trump's only really interested in Venezuela because he's heard they've got these huge reserves of crude, which he thinks means a really large stash of porn.
I just think American intervention is very much like my cooking, because there's always lots of oil involved. I steam in without really knowing what I'm doing, and many people die.
There is that sort of sense suddenly, people are, there's a sort of cross-party thing. I mean, Jeremy Hunt has been got very involved. He's urging the EU nations to impose... It's the EU nations, he thinks, should start imposing sanctions, which is...
I sort of imagine people look at us trying to get involved in world affairs now, kind of like, you know, when you let the dog sit at the dinner table? And you're like, oh, look, he thinks he's people! Like the little joke nation where they're like, oh, isn't that sweet? You know, we're insisting another country has a new election because of political chaos being caused. It displays a slight lack of self-awareness, really, doesn't it?
This is the news that UK Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt has called for sanctions on figures linked to Venezuela's embattled and controversial president, Nicolas Maduro. Leader of the opposition, Juan Guaido, rode a wave of public disillusionment with the government to declare himself interim leader and is now plotting with the military. It's not for me to put ideas into anyone's head, but... if Jeremy Corbyn's listening, the St John's ambulance stands ready and can march on Downing Street within an hour. This is one of those situations where one really misses the delicate touch of Boris Johnson as Foreign Secretary. Wandering through the streets of Caracas, eating an entire chorizo and muttering, "Tricky chap, Johnny Siesta." 2 points to 10. And at the end of round one, the scores are Andy and Aisha have 4, and so too do Tim and Lucy. Are you happy with 4 points, Lucy?
I felt Tim deserved more, but, yeah, no, that's lovely. I just was saying it's the same every week.
The score?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the news. We start round two with a special offer from the Swan Restaurant in Henley.
This Valentine's Day, book a table for you and your loved one to celebrate with a sumptuous 5-course lover's dinner. 10% discount for tables of 3 or more.
Aisha, who just won't quit?
This is the former Labour MP for Peterborough, Fiona Onasania, who on Tuesday was jailed for, I think it was 3 months, for a sort of speeding offence. She got caught speeding, and if she had just fessed up to speeding, it probably all would have gone away. But instead, she made up a big porcupine and said that it was someone else. And then the whole thing escalated and she got caught and she has been sent to prison. So she's been asked to serve a custodial sentence, so she'll be locked up with no access to the outside world, and most of us who are covering Brexit are quite jealous of her. It's quite a big deal because it's the first sitting MP to be sort of, I think, in jail for this amount of time for about sort of 30 years, and she's refusing to stop being an MP, so she's going to carry on getting her salary. So everybody is up in arms about it.
I think it is a savage indictment, though, of modern-day politicians that even their crimes are mediocre. No, seriously, I mean, John Stonehouse left his clothes on the beach, faked his own death and disappeared to Australia with his mistress. You know, Jeffrey Archer and Jonathan Aitken tried to defraud thousands out of newspapers by perjuring themselves in libel cases. You know, they thought big. Where's the glamour of yesteryear? That's what I'm looking
for. Stonehouse came back and spoke in Parliament after he'd been declared dead, after they'd had a minute's silence for him. He had the gall to come back. He still made speeches.
Yeah. But that's probably in the House of Lords, was it? You can make a speech when you're dead there. But it's true. I mean, obviously, it's wrong to lie to the police about whether you're right, but it is for what? I don't know, how much was the speeding fine?
It wasn't even very much. But the other thing that's interesting is that the Attorney General has now got involved and said that he is going to look to whether the sentence was too lenient and it should be extended. And he won't do that in other horrendous cases. Like, there was a horrible case recently where a woman got murdered by her partner and he refuses. So I have to say, I think it looks a tiny bit politically motivated.
Yeah. I suppose she didn't want... It was 3 points on her licence as well that she was trying to avoid, which you do think, well, it's a lot of fuss to avoid 3 points on your licence. She was trying to supplement her income with a Deliveroo job, possibly. I don't know. I tell you what worries me about this is if you can continue to be a politician while you're in prison, that might set quite a dangerous precedent for America.
Yeah.
Well, the best thing about this is the excuse she used. I mean, everyone's blaming sort of Vladimir Putin for Brexit, and she claimed that a Russian was driving the car at the time. I said, ah, yes, I've got a cunning plan. To avoid these points, I will blame it on the Russians. Unfortunately, she didn't check that the Russian in question was in the country at the time. But it's, you know, I mean, it's quite good preparation where she's been. I mean, she's going to be confined, completely out of touch with the rest of society. I mean... You'd have thought an MP would cope quite well in those circumstances.
She presumably... So if she is going to... She's trying to continue sitting as an MP, so they'll have to... She could see her constituents during visiting hours, I suppose. I wouldn't mind. I'd actually go and see my MP. My MP's Nick Hurd, and I would love to see him banged up. And I would... Hi, Nick. And I would go...
Just means you've got to have very strict surgery times, I suspect.
Yeah, actually, MPs would probably like it. And you could smuggle Hansard in a cake so she knows what's been going on.
It's fun in there as well. I mean, Lord Taylor of Warwick, who's one of the last parliamentarians to be jailed, he said he made more friends in jail than he had in the House of Lords. So.
This is Fiona Onasanya, the former Labour, now independent MP, who doesn't currently have quite as much independence as she'd like. Since she's serving a 3-month sentence for lying to avoid a speeding ticket, Onasanya is the first sitting MP to be jailed since 1991, when it surprisingly turned out that Sir Teddy Taylor had been the getaway driver in the Brinks Matt Bullion heist. Just did it for kicks, apparently. Who can blame him, frankly? Onasanya has already been expelled by the Labour Party, so at least we know what the line is for unacceptable behaviour. Bang on about Hitler all you like, but do not lie to the DVLA. 2 points to Aisha. Lucy, where is cold weather snow joke?
Aha. This concerns the polar vortex. So the polar vortex is a wind which circulates cold air around the Arctic region. But this year it has split in two, creating a double vortex of cold wind, which, by the way, on a weather map, the double vortex, if you've seen it, it looks quite a lot like a pair of breasts. That's what I call a cold front.
Two points.
Yeah. Very good. So the double vortex, the polar vortex, has made it very cold in America, which was an opportunity for Trump to do his joke that he loves, where he was like, oh, I'm a bit cold. Where's that global warming when you need it, right? Which he always does. I think it is a dad... my dad always had the joke that he did, which was, what did Spanish fireman call his two children, Jose and Hose B? Right. Yeah, but my dad told it as, what did the Spanish fireman call his two children? Jose 1 and Jose 2. Because basically, my dad didn't understand how jokes work. Very much like Donald Trump doesn't understand how global warming works. Because what's happening is global warming is causing hot air over the Arctic, which is pushing it down. So America's been very cold.
Minus 40, wasn't it, in sun? That's, I think that's scientifically cold enough for a Geordie to put a shirt on. But they advised, apparently they were advising people that if they went outside, they weren't to talk, because inhaling the cold air could be dangerous. I mean, that would be hell for English people, wouldn't it? Imagine weather that's too cold to talk about.
We're lucky it was happening there, though, rather than here. I mean, I was very struck, this warning about not going outdoors. The Chicago Tribune, the local paper, their splash headline was, "Expert, don't go outdoors." I mean, that wouldn't work here, would it? Because 52% of the country would be dead because they're sick of experts. I've got a friend over there, and I said, "How cold is it?" And he said, "It's so cold that people are sitting around pictures of Theresa May's smile to warm up."
But in Michigan, there is a town called Hell. And it has frozen over, which probably explains why Jeremy Corbyn agreed to meet Theresa May. So it's been very cold, and it's been quite fun. I love an extreme weather story. I'm like the Daily Express in that respect. And and I've enjoyed all the stuff. They did a thing where one of the reporters froze an egg on the pavement, because this is how you measure weather, is what an egg does on the pavement. Because if it's hot, they always go, oh, you can fry an egg on the pavement, and now it's cold, you can freeze an egg on the pavement. I think the weather should always be what happens to an egg on a pavement, right? So you threaten, you go, Carol, what's the weather? And she's like, oh, well, the egg's wet. It's raining. Oh, yeah. The egg's rolled into the gutter, it's windy. And God, it's foggy. I can't see the egg. I can't see the egg.
This is the news that some parts of the US have reached lower temperatures than Antarctica, thanks to a phenomenon known as the polar vortex. The cold weather has caused carnage in the US, where trains have been delayed, posts cancelled, and President Trump has had to be reminded 3 times to put his mittens on. Even though Mike Pence had sewn them into his coat. The US Postal Service has had to halt deliveries in some parts of the Great Plains, meaning locals have been forced to resort to traditional means of correspondence, such as writing "send liquor" on a horse and slapping it on the bum. In America, they measure temperature by Fahrenheit as opposed to Celsius, like us in Britain. Quick reminder to avoid confusion, Celsius is the scale of temperature on which water boils at 100 degrees and freezes at 0 degrees, and Fahrenheit is the one that is wrong.
Before we leave you, here is the wonderful Jeremy Hardy giving us his distinctive take on the world.
Jeremy, who's got here by the skin of their teeth?
Various young, vulnerable people are being brought in from the Calais refugee camp. And some of the kids, it is said, look older than 18. But it is very hard to gauge how old people are, because different experiences will age you. If you've grown up in a war zone and you've made it from Afghanistan to northern France on foot, apart from a brief sit down on a leaky dinghy in the Aegean, that will age you, as will the fact of not having slept for about a year. That will age you. Listeners, Miles has 5 young children, and despite being under 40, looks like Margaret Rutherford in her later years. Myself, I'm prone to stress and worry, and despite being a mere 55 years old, I resemble a quilt made from offcuts of Keith Richards and W.H. Auden. The trouble is, when you're a dad, you think, well, life's not going so badly. The daughter's safe. She's growing up. She's 9 years old. And, you know, she's at primary school. She's doing all right, reasonably happy. And then you think, I'm 38 years old and I've got bleeding nits. And I'll be sitting in a meeting with some arse of a producer from somewhere, and I'll be sitting there scratching, and they'll say, oh, is anything wrong, Jeremy? I'll say, oh, good Lord, no, 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 there's nothing wrong, just head lice. And you can't catch them, they're tiny wee devils. Otherwise, you know, if you could trap them, you could, you know, collect up a lot and throw them over the walls of private schools.
I think most jobs are utterly pointless anyway. Unless you're a nurse or a bin man, the chances are your job is utterly pointless and does nothing to augment the happiness of humankind.
Well, you can all leave here with sunshine in your heart.
Donald Trump has chosen this moment to moot the idea of teachers being given firearms. Now, it's easy to snap to instant judgment, and obviously, overwhelmingly, most British teachers are thinking, yeah, can we? My year eights are a nightmare. If we take the inspector hostage, do we get a good Ofsted? That would be the instant reaction. But what he's saying is, he doesn't mean all teachers should have guns. I mean, that would be daft. What he's saying about 20%. About 20%, and he says the ones who are firearms trained, perhaps somebody who was in the military, still gets flashbacks, but he's sort of stable. Perhaps somebody who was a police officer who took early retirement over a death in custody is now basketball coach.
Decision that drug companies are sitting up and taking notice.
This is Viagra, the tablet form Charlotte Green. And if you don't have an erection and you want to have one, the simple answer is to fall asleep with your flies open on a National Express coach. Now, that, I'm giving that advice for free. I don't even want a consultancy fee for that. It's my gift to you, the audience.
Taking part in the news quiz were Andy Hamilton, Tim Shipman, Aisha Hazarika and Lucy Porter. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Diana Speed. The chair's script was written by Madeline Brettingham, Max Davis and Mike Shepherd, with additional material by Vivian Riddoch, Jane McCutcheon and Catherine Brinkworth. The producer was Victoria Lloyd, and it was a BBC Studios production.